Ta-da! It's a video about Tiffany. I hope you like it. Psst! Hey, hey, would you like to know more? Okay, great. So listen, I need to tell you about this poem. Come with me behind the scenes where I've been working on this for, I don't even know how long. Take a seat. Get comfortable. It all began with these articles I read saying the name Tiffany is very old, maybe medieval. What a cute and easy video, Past Gray thought, and it could have been, if I'd just left things alone. But no, I wanted to read the article sources, which turned out didn't often contain the name Tiffany at all, but rather the ye olden name Theophania, or the super old Theophanu. And like, maybe these medieval ladies called themselves Tiff, but that's just a bit too cute, isn't it? To me, it looked like the sort of Lady Godiva story where later writers say a thing happened, but there's no evidence from the time that it did, because it's a fairy tale, the kind history is full of once you go looking. Don't go looking. So for a while, the Tiffany video teetered on the edge of getting binned, but it turned out my Lady Godiva suspicions were wrong when some medieval Tiffanys did turn up to save the project. But the poem happened before that, and listen, I need to tell you about it, otherwise I might just explode trying to contain all the excruciating details and number of obsessive hours poured into this poem, and I can't let it all have been for nothing. Okay, ready? No? Too bad. Here's the poem. William de Conisbee came out of Brittany with his wife Tiffany and his maid Manfass and his dog Hardegrass. It's okay. That's it. But what isn't okay is that this poem popped up in modern writings, implying its proof that Tiffany is maybe medieval, but never with the poem's date or an author attached, making it impossible to pin to a timeline, which made the poem annoying. Doubly so, because it's supposed to be a joke. Like, here it is in this 1859 history book with this weird French-style humorous illustration, but I don't get it. Is it the name of the dog? What's the joke? If you get it, please leave a comment. I need to know. Anyway, when you're reading about a topic, this is the sort of thing that happens a lot. There's some detail you keep stumbling over and over, and it could be the critical clue. I'm looking for the earliest Tiffany A.N.Y. There's a Tiffany A.N.Y. right here. Maybe the very first, if I could just pin the poem to its proper place. But no. I had just resolved to give up on this poem when the Tiffanys of America arrived at my door, which I had ordered weeks ago to hopefully help with the main Tiffany video, but it was just 90% a literal list of people named Tiffany in America with hilariously unclear photos. The book was written by Nelson Otis Tiffany, and thanks Charles Lewis Tiffany for making the book possible with his liberal contributions of money. I love how explicit that is. Then, totally unrelated, there follows a description of how the Tiffany family crest is the most beautiful thing of its kind we have ever seen, and then 2 pages of the densest family flattery ever put in print. But in between those two sections to mock me, the poem appeared again, without a date, but with a footnote path to follow. This is the moment I broke and swore to the gods above and below I would find the primary source of this Brittany Tiffany poem, no matter the time, no matter the cost. And when you give that to the gods, they, of course, played a joke upon Gray, making his pursuit of this poem as painful as possible. Here's what happened. The Tiffanys of America got the poem from Richmondshire, its ancient lords and edifices, which I ordered and, when it arrived, found the full title to be Richmondshire, its ancient lords and edifices, a concise guide to the localities of interest to the tourist and antiquary with short notices of memorable men. I opened it and out fell an old map, which is a thrilling moment no matter what's mapped on the map. After checking for spots marked X, back to the book to find the poem, which had a pencil highlight mark and a note below. It seems whoever owned this book before me was also on their own poetic Tiffany journey. Maybe it was Nelson Otis Tiffany. I don't know. So, Richmondshire, its ancient lords and edifices, a concise guide to the localities of interest to the tourist and antiquary with short notices of memorable men, list the poem as from the author M. Fieri. Now, buying old rare books gets expensive real fast, so I headed down to my local library to try and track M. Fieri down, which took a while because, one, I didn't know then, but I do know now that M is an old abbreviation for Mr., and the author referenced was Mr. Augustine Fieri and his book The History of the Conquest of England by the Normans. And two, my library predates the Dewey Decimal System, which makes every book search an adventure through 17th century organizational idiosyncrasy, which is delightful when you're browsing, but infuriating when you're in the wrong section about England and you can't find the book you're looking for because you should be in the England only section, but not here behind the little book elevator. Anyway, Fieri's book was on the shelf. I grabbed it, sat down with it, and flipped through the pages to find the poem. And that History of the Conquest of England by the Normans isn't the primary resource either, pointing to Hearn Pradif ad John de Fordham Scotachronicon?
Okay, what's the Scotachronicon?
According to Wikipedia, it's a history book of Scotland, started in the 1300s by a priest in Aberdeen and continued after his death by an abbot in Inchcombe. These historians worked to cover the history of Scotland from their present day back to the literal Genesis, a rather epic undertaking deserving the epic name the Scotchonomicron. Fun fact, this book is one of the earliest references to Robin Hood, though the authors take a rather, more dim view of the Hood and his hoi polloi fans than most modern interpretations. According to them, then arose the famous murderer Robin Hood from among the disinherited, whom the foolish populace are so inordinately fond of celebrating. Interesting, but I didn't come to the library to track down the earliest reference to Robin Hood. It's a Piers Plowman poems, by the way. I'm here to find the Scotchachromicon in the Scotland history section, which is in the dark.
Sure glad my phone has a flashlight. There it is. The Scotchachromicon. Oh, look at all these handwritten notes. Last time this was checked out was 1995.
Alas, there was no poem on page 172, but maybe that page number was for a different edition, so there was nothing to do but start flipping and skimming, over and over and over and over and over and over through every single crinkly page to find the Brittany Tiffany poem nowhere. Maybe the poem was among those pages and I just missed it. I mean, the book is in Latin. It turned out not. I didn't know it at the time, but I did have the wrong edition, but in an unexpected way. This one printed in MDCCLIX, but if you were to search further, say at the largest library in the world with 200 million volumes, you could find an earlier edition printed in MDCCXXII, which was both much smaller and with hilariously large font, like the author was trying to puff up the book. But in this one, on page 170, there she was, Brittany Tiffany A.N.Y. I was thrilled to have found truly medieval evidence of Tiffany. I had the primary source. I could pin the poem to the 1400s. Or so I thought, until I remembered that these guys wrote in Latin and this poem is in modern-ish English. How could that be? Well, it's because this poem isn't in the Scotchachronicon at all. It's a footnote added by the editor of this 1722 edition, and it's also not the primary source, the editor adding, in an ancient writing of parchment kept charily by the family of the Conisbe among their records, they have this written. Charily? That's an old word that means cautious or warily? That's weird. And ancient? How ancient? Fast forward past much time spent searching Conisbe family records without luck. Though, of course, now that I'm talking about this, I know some long descendant of the Conisbe clan will show up at my door with a reliquary box and the poem inside, which I'll need to send off for some radiocarbon dating, and I also know that every example of an old Tiffany A.N.Y. will be sent to my door forevermore, but that's future Gray's problem. For current Gray, well, now past Gray at the time of writing and research, the one path the gods had directed before me I wish I had not followed through. Who is Theo Hernius, the editor? Well, to find out, step one is to find his non-Latinized name. Thomas Hearn. Thomas Hearn was, well, we'll get to that, but he worked at the Bodleian Library at Oxford in the early 1700s and published lots of editions of medieval texts, Scotchachromicon among them. Now, trying to find more information about why someone wrote a footnote 300 years ago seemed hopeless, but Google, against all odds, turned up the collected letters of Alexander Pope, a contemporary of Hearn's in England who wrote a 35-page letter about Hearn that begins, "That he may never be forgotten, who has raked the repositories of antiquity and has been indefatigable in fetching learning from places where many would not have sought after it, a few memorials of his life and some observations on his writing will, we hope, redound to his credit." Which at first sounds like, wow, what a fan, and this 35-page letter by Alexander Pope happens to mention the Brittany Tiffany poem, though in a context that seems off, saying Hearn had so many not just historical documents but poems in particular that it would waste your time to tell you about all of them. Pope then says Hearn wanted to be useful by saving them all, but then lists several clearly useful to no one ever poems, including Brittany Tiffany. It's just sort of weird, and I would have left it at that, should have left it at that, but then this passage caught my eye. "We have taken the liberty to correct some few mistakes in Hearn's writing, and been careful not to offend and any impartial reader. We have avoided flattery on one hand and scandal on the other. That's a very I don't love drama sentence from Pope, isn't it? I'm just somehow always at the center of drama. Oh, this burn book? It's nothing. Just where I write down my ideas for plays. I'm a literal dramatist, you know. Pope then goes on to fill his 35-page letter with nothing but corrections for every mistake Hearn ever made in all of his work in this infuriating, oh, let me just help you out, Hearn, kind of way. Some observations on his writing, indeed. Hearn gets a date wrong, and Pope says, I'm sorry, Hearn. See here, where you wrote 1274, you have either not kept up with your avowed regard for truth, or unhappily blundered in a point of chronology. You say this man in 1274 studied at Canterbury College, and he wrote about it, but I'm afraid to tell you, the college was not built until 1363. Therefore, this man must have either lived 89 years before he was born, or written of a place many years before it was built. Oh, Hearn, now don't be annoyed. These corrections, how much soever they may look like ridicule, are undoubted confirmations of your industry, and will ever be thought so by persons of deeper penetration. Meow. Alexander Pope, it turns out, is the human who coined the phrase damning with faint praise. Of course, only after reading the entire letter did I realize I could have skipped it had I first seen Pope hanging out on the bottom of Hearn's Wikipedia page, calling Hearn's life work unappealing and monkish. Hearn complained into his diary that Alexander Pope, one of the most quoted authors in the English language, just below Shakespeare and the Bible, lacked scholarship. Alexander Pope, in turn, created a character for one of his plays based on Hearn named Wormius, a know-nothing, know-it-all pedant. Hearn shot back, saying Pope play was a scurrilous piece against many of the greatest men of the age. This delicious beef was the only highlight of my reading, so I needed to know more, but putting plus Hearn plus Wormius into Google returned exactly one result, the Wikipedia page itself, which is super sus. I mean, does information even exist if it's not on the internet? Oh right, of course. So I had to check the listed footnote, which wasn't at the library, so I ordered the book, it arrived, I opened it, I read it, and the Hearn Wormius thing checks out. Amazing. But even after that, Alexander Pope just couldn't let it go for some reason, and after Hearn's death, he wrote, Hearn was a most sordid poor wretch. He had universal mistrust of the generality of mankind, lived in a slovenly, stingy manner, and died possessed of what he had not the heart to enjoy. Alex, jeez. So as you can see, we've traveled down many paths here, and at this point, I really needed a friend to talk to about this in my life. The number of people willing to listen for months on end to updates about not even the very broad topic of the origin of the name Tiffany, remember, that's where we started, not even of the exact original source of one poem that mentions the name Tiffany A-N-Y, but of two dead dudes' schoolboy-level squabbles that are tangentially related to Tiffany is zero. But then there was hope. I can't even remember how I found it now, but I came across another Hearn burn via historian John Horace Round in his Feudal England, Historical Studies on the XIth and XIIth Centuries, complaining about Hearn's lack of document date questioning, ignoring of internal evidence, and superficial examinations, leading to publishing more wrong dates polluting the timeline for everyone. Oh, and Hearn also got the poem's surname spelling wrong, twice, which is why nothing turned up for Conisbee family records earlier. Oof. At this point, Hearn having cost me so much time and feeling so thoroughly alone in the world, I was excited to find in John Horace Round a friend to phone and complain with over coffee. As it happens, he even translated part of the Doomsday Book, which was the very first source I checked when starting the Tiffany Project so long ago. We were going to have loads to talk about. While searching for his digits, I realized in my excitement I had missed the original publication date of his work. Round had died 100 years ago, and I was back to being Grey Nomates, as usual. Okay, so look, this side path I've been carving out to even be able to talk about the Brittany Tiffany poem is only a tiny, tiny part of all of the explorations that had to happen to make the main Tiffany video. I've been here alone for, oh gods, half a year as the only one alive who cares about any of this. This script is so long now. Will anyone make it this far? Is anyone here? Okay, snap out of it. Now, in my journeys, I had learned two things about Hearn. First, his contemporaries referred to him as an antiquarian, which in my head translated as old-timey for historian, but was actually old-timey code for hoarder. Hearn loved collecting every historic document he could find, but was not very good at sorting them out. The second thing was that Hearn's edition of the Scotronomicon, from which all sources pointed back to as the providence of the poem, is worse than useless, as not only are his contributions of dubious value, but he also took it upon himself to cut out a lot, which explains why his edition was printed in giant font. This is not considered canonical. And this should have been the end of it, but there was still something left to try to pin to the timeline. Was this Tiffany Any a real person, and when did she live? Okay, I know. In retrospect, it seems obvious I should have started here. Painfully obvious, but you only know at the end what is the fastest way from the beginning. Now, surely, I thought, at least tracking down genealogical records of the family the poem mentioned, everything would check out. Right? Wrong. So, as a reminder, the poem starts with William from Brittany, wife Tiffany. William Conisbee was a real person in the 1300s in England, not Brittany, and his wife was Beatrice, not Tiffany. They had a son, Thomas Conisbee, who did go to Brittany with the Black Prince, who was alive at the time, to battle. And Thomas, while fighting, became a prisoner of war. However, his captor agreed to let Thomas go if he would marry his daughter, Tiffany, which he did, and it was Thomas who came out of Brittany with his wife Tiffany, except not, because if you look up her paperwork, her name is actually Theophania. She's only called Tiffany hundreds of years later. So the poem isn't right about anything. God damn you, Hearn! Everything is wrong, and the poem is evidence of nothing useful at all. I'm sorry. It's been a lot. So here's the final working theory. Hearn knew the Conisbee family, who either told him of the poem, or perhaps he spotted it himself, expressed an outsized interest in their collection of old papers, as he was wont to do, but either way, when editing his edition of the Scotochronicon and it mentioned the family, that triggered his memory and he added in his footnote, wrong as he saw it, or wrong as he remembered it. That note in his non-canonical edition, through pure bad luck, got swept up in the paper-writing footnote copy-paste game where no one checks the original, and the context that the name Tiffany is not actually in the original book got lost. At least now the timeline is complete, but all this work has shown is that in the 1700s the name Tiffany Any existed, which was not in question at all at the beginning. For the gods' capricious, tormenting pleasure alone, this path went absolutely nowhere, provided nothing of value, and drained many hours of my sadly finite life. Thanks for listening? I guess I just really needed to get out all of this frustration to tell you the story of tracking down a poem that didn't even make it into the main video. The end. Hello. Thank you for making it to not just the end of the video, but after the end of the video. Welcome. Well, that ended up being quite a journey over the past half a year. Sometimes in making a video, the path through the forest of all knowledge is clearly marked out. Other times, you have something much more difficult to try to get through. Ooh, don't step on the... Whoa. And occasionally, there's almost nothing, and you're in danger of getting quite lost. But this is the job, to turn something that is unmarked into something that's slightly marked, perhaps something that's been completed with trusses to get you over the dangerous and difficult parts. Some of the videos I make take unreasonably long amounts of time and unreasonably large amounts of effort. Things that are frankly not very good business sense from a YouTube algorithm sort of way, but I know that as a viewer, I love it when people make those sorts of videos, and I imagine if you're still watching, you're one of the people who likes those kinds of videos as well. I've resisted for years coming up with a name for the people who support the channel. I've never really liked that stuff, but I've changed my thoughts on that because I realize that they really are part of the team now. And I know how this is going to sound, but I really mean it. The past 6 months, I have definitely felt very alone at times working on this. But one of the things that has helped me push on with a crazy project like this is knowing that there are a lot of people who really care about these videos. The capricious whims of the YouTube gods cannot be relied upon, but people willing to back projects directly that they really like, it means so much. These videos aren't for everyone, they're for you. So if you would like to become a Bonnie Bee and help support the creation of future videos, which will also get you access to some of the behind the scenes of how the videos are made, I just have one requirement first. You must be financially self-supporting, so no students in particular. I want people to work on themselves and work on their own lives before they try to help me out. I will be fine. Make sure you're good first. And I plan on doing this for a long time. I have been doing this for a long time. I'll be here later. So, as long as you're set there, if you would like to join, you can click here. And thank you so much. I'll see you in the next video.